The matter of Alexandra Padilla versus Mio Sunan and Young Il-An. Sorry if I've mispronounced that. May we have appearances, please?
Thank you, Your Honor. Sam Miles, Holston McDonald, who's here this file, we want to tell you on behalf of the respondent, Young Il-An, my assistant.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Confucione, please go ahead.
Thank you for hearing the case this morning. I appreciate it. I'd like to ask for 2 minutes of rebuttal, if I may, Judge.
Fine.
I mean, the issue squarely before the court, as the court has phrased it, are the owners of vacant commercial lots liable to pedestrians injured by poorly maintained sidewalks abutting the lots? My position is that yes, the answer is yes, for a couple of different reasons. If you look at the Stewart case itself, I mean, the first thing I would point out is the language of Stewart, at least, certainly extends to the defendant in this case. Stewart consistently used the language of commercial landowner, commercial property owner, owner of commercial property. Here, if you look at the record of this case, the defendant, he actually owned at least four lots on the same street. It was one particular lot, which appeared to be almost like a joined lot or two lots in a row. But he owned at least four lots on that same street. It was in the midst of commercial businesses. It was right next door to the beauty supply place that actually the witness to the plaintiff's fall came out of. One lot, I know my opposing counsel said it wasn't the lot in question, but one of these four lots on the street, the defendants had purchased for $1, I believe, in about 1992 and sold it for $135,000 around the time of the deposition shortly before. If you look at the defendant's deposition testimony itself, I mean, and there's nothing wrong with this. He said it's a commercial enterprise. I bought these lots hoping that I would be able to build out a business on it and either sell it or rent it out, which is perfectly fine. I mean, that's our system. He owned dry cleaning businesses, he said in his deposition. He resides in Cherry Hill. He's familiar with insurance. He has insurance, obviously, on his dry cleaning business. And this has been for 30 years he's owned these four lots, which includes the lot that the plaintiff fell on. So, to me, I think just looking at the language of Stewart and then saying, okay, should a commercial lot owner expand to include or being, you know, envisioned to include somebody that owns a lot like the defendant in this situation, I don't really think it's any stretch of Stewart. And then if I look at the Stewart rationale, which of course that case came out in 1981, but, you know, I think one of the ways the court could look at the cases, and ultimately this case is a little bit different from maybe other cases the court has had before, because ultimately it's really a question for the court on whether or not the duty should be extended to this defendant. That's really what we're talking about. So if the court looked at Stewart and said, well, we feel that Stewart, which we decided in 1981, although at the time it could have been appropriate, has kind of been outgrown or things have changed, or we've gone away from the Stewart reasoning that led to the imposition of liability for commercial landowner, that would be a reason undercutting me. But I think if you look at the reasons in the Stewart case, and just to highlight a few of them, like Stewart said, the duty imposed for sidewalk commercial landowner is because they have considerable interest and rights with regard to the property. So I would say this, you know, if you own commercial land and you have a thriving, let's say you have a car dealership on the business, you certainly have a greater degree of a commercial interest there. But that's really what it is. It's just a matter of degree. The nature of the interest is really the same. This defendant, again, looking at his own deposition testimony, and there's nothing wrong with this. I'm not criticizing it, but he bought the lots for commercial gain. That's what it's about. He's trying to buy lots, build them out, and make a profit on them ultimately, which is fine. But the nature of the commercial interest is really the same for this landowner as it is for somebody that has an active business on it.
Can you help me understand that? Because I thought that the reasoning in Stewart was that there was a specific commercial interest in the sidewalk itself, because in order to get people to the thriving business, they needed to walk on the sidewalk. And so people who own thriving businesses are benefiting from the sidewalk and the existence of sidewalks outside of that business so that they can get customers to come into their thriving business. And I think that makes sense if you're talking about a pub or, you know, something, or you mentioned a beauty supply store, something that's trying to have hundreds of people in and out. A sidewalk is a good way for people to be able to get to your business.
Right.
How would that same rationale apply to a vacant lot where no one is trying to get anyone to come there?
It applies in the same way. It's just a matter of degree. So, for example, in this case, right, the lot actually in question was purchased right next door to an ongoing business, this beauty supply business that Your Honor referenced.
But defendant didn't own that beauty supply business, correct?
He didn't own that beauty supply business, but he bought the lot, right, in 1992. The fact that there's a sidewalk there, the fact that it's in the midst of these other commercial businesses, all that goes to the value of that lot. If that lot was somewhere where there weren't sidewalks, where it wasn't next to an ongoing business, that lot, in theory, in a capitalist market, would have less value to the defendant. So I agree with you that
But that doesn't seem to be the rationale that Stewart was relying on. Stewart seemed to be specifically relying on a thriving business needs people to get to it. And in order for people to get to it, they need to use a sidewalk. Therefore, they should have a duty to maintain the sidewalk. Here, there is no thriving business for anyone to get to. And certainly this defendant, if he doesn't own the beauty supply store, it shouldn't matter to him whether or not people ever go to the beauty supply store.
I don't think, Your Honor, that that's the only rationale that Stewart relied on. I do think that the Stewart case obviously had the two lots next to each other, and it was the lot next to the boarded up business, essentially, that was... But the only rationale was not whether or not there was this operating business.
But the court in that case specifically defined the fact that if somebody was going to be hurt inside the store and the owner was going to have to deal with that liability, that it should extend to the area that the patron would have to get through to get inside the store.
And?
Meaning it was an active store, an active commercial enterprise.
But that doesn't change the nature of the same analysis applies to a vacant lot. This defendant's liable for what happens on his vacant lot, just as he would be liable if something happened inside his store.
But in I thought in Stewart the discussion of the vacant lot was because it was owned by the same defendant who owned the tavern. And so plaintiff had been in this tavern. And if the plaintiff had fallen inside the tavern, then the person had been liable, would have been liable. Mm-hmm. And here the plaintiff falls outside of the tavern on an adjacent vacant lot that is owned by the tavern owner. And so I thought the court's point was to get people to the tavern, it should be this defendant's responsibility to make sure the sidewalks are in good repair because he's benefiting from the sidewalk's existence because he wants lots of people coming to his tavern to have a drink.
I agree with Your Honor there. If we had the same lot, right, same defendant's ownership, and they had a business on it, obviously it would be on all fours. But the issue here is, do we say that the Stewart imposition of liability should go away because there's no active business on the lot? That, right? That's really what the issue is before the court. What I'm saying is, if you look at Stewart, which, you know, I understand stare decisis, and it is 40 years ago, but if you look at what Stewart said, that is not the only rationale by which they said we're going to depart from the historical rule that basically the government was responsible in tort and a commercial landowner wasn't.
So that was one of the ones you cited. What other rationale in Stewart?
Yeah, all the other rationales you look at, they said, Stewart said, whether imposing a duty would give an incentive to the landowner to care for the property. Obviously, that applies equally whether or not there's a business on the lot or not. And beyond that, as Stewart recognized, and again, Your Honors, this was 1981, you know, it's not like 1650 where the government is responsible for the public sidewalk. The New Jersey legislature in a statute has recognized that municipalities may give the burden of the duty to maintain sidewalks on the private owner. And they, almost every municipality does, including in this case.
What statute is that? I know the statute, ordinance.
The statute is NJSA. I'll get you the cellular. find the site for you as I'm continuing to talk. I cited it in my briefs below.
You can give it to us on the.
I'll give it to you later. I apologize. It's not off the top of my head, but go ahead, Judge. No, it's all right.
So your point is it's not so much the active business, but rather the capacity to generate income.
Exactly, Judge. It's the capacity to generate income. And in this case, again, you know, tethering it back to these discrete facts, he bought at least four lots. One of the lots, it wasn't this specific lot, but one of the lots he sold for, I mean, he bought it for a dollar. He sold it for $135,000. He's already responsible for his own land. So the question is it fair and equitable under a duty analysis and tort to extend his duty to the public sidewalk, which he already has the duty to maintain under the ordinances anyway?
There was another reason given in Stewart as well, and that is that insurance would be available that could be absorbed and covered as part of the cost of doing business. Is insurance available for vacant commercial lots as a general rule? Do you know?
I don't know the answer to that. I looked again at the record below. I wasn't involved in the lower court case, but I did look again at the record, and it did not look like that issue was broached by either side in the case. I don't know the answer, but
Counsel, wasn't there an indication in the deposition that the defendant had some trouble obtaining insurance for this particular property, that the insurance companies didn't want to insure it?
Not that I saw, no. In fact, he said he was familiar with insurance because, again, he had a dry cleaning business he insured. He had his residential property that he insured.
It seemed from the deposition it wasn't very clear a lot of the answers, but from the deposition, he simply said insurance companies didn't really want to insure it. So I had not insured it for liability, which isn't really a clear indication as to whether. And then he was asked, what insurance company said they will not insure the vacant lot? I can't recall. And he just couldn't recall. So it didn't seem like there was a clear indication that the vacant lot would not be insured.
Right. I think that's probably a fair interpretation, Your Honor.
It's likely to be a risk as to which there's going to be some difficulty in getting insurance because no one's on the property, right? It's
right.
There's no one there to see if there's on a day-to-day basis or even perhaps every once a month to check on the condition of the property.
Yeah. I mean, in this, I'm sorry, Your Honor, if I cut you off, but this case was a little different because when I looked at the deposition testimony of the defendant, because he owned the four lots, he actually said in his deposition, you know, I basically drove to these properties on that street 3 to 4 times a month, which seemed like for 30 years. But then he said, no, not that, not
for. But as a general proposition, a vacant lot versus an ongoing.
Harder to insure.
I would think would probably be very difficult to insure.
Yeah. So, I mean, what you would think then in theory, okay, well, maybe from a policy standpoint, then maybe that would drive down the value.
The other thing is commercial, I don't know the answer to this, mm-hmm. is commercial insurance available when there's only a prospective business there? Because commercial insurance is an entity in and of itself.
Yeah. I think that from the standpoint of liability for the land, so let's say it's a vacant lot, and I know there's different categories, whether you're a trespasser on the land and all that, but even at the most advanced category of if you're a trespasser on the land, I believe under the law, this is off the top of my head, so let's hope I'm wrong, that you still could be liable as a landowner if essentially there's like a landmine on your property that somebody steps on. In other words, some like real dangerous thing that was left on the property that even a trespasser could be, sue you for injury. So from that standpoint, I would think there would be at least insurance available for the lot itself for liability in that regard. And then if there is, then the question is, well, is it unfair in tort to extend it to the sidewalk? And my view would be, for all those reasons, it's not.
Perhaps we can hear from other counsel later as to whether this type of insurance is actually available. Please.
And in Stewart, I thought that the rationale was that there's this capacity to spread the risk of loss arising from an injury on an abutting sidewalk from insurance by raising the prices of goods for the customers to cover the cost of insurance. I thought that was something that was specifically discussed in Stewart. We can pass on the cost of paying for insurance to the customers of this thriving business. Again, here, no customers. So even if he could get insurance, he has no way to pass that off.
I don't think that's true, though, Your Honor, with respect on this record, because this man purchased four lots. One of them he bought for $1 and sold it for $135,000.
I understand that you're saying that he earned a profit over 30 years of $135,000, but that's still not customers to pass off an ongoing insurance cost to.
I appreciate what you're saying, but I don't think that's an intellectual distinction to make under the law.
But that's a sale. That's a different concept, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean, you know.
You could always say there should be a duty because you could sell the property after the accident. And but if we're talking about paying for insurance, you have to have the property to get the insurance.
But if it's a commercial property, right, like a residential property, I understand the court and the legislature, for example, may say, well, there are other interests in promoting residential properties. Somebody, a man and woman or whatever, might be raising their family on it. There are other interests. This is just a purely commercial enterprise. There's nothing wrong with the commercial.
There's no enterprise. It's just a vacant lot. You're calling it commercial because no one resides there, but there's no enterprise of any kind happening, right? There's
no. I actually disagree with that, because if he bought four lots in 1992, and in his deposition said, I hope to either build it out and sell it or rent it, and even if he couldn't do that, which apparently he couldn't, he had 30 years of a commercially zoned property on a commercial street. He chose not to develop it for whatever reason. He could have sold it in all that time if he didn't want to venture into this area.
But you agree that he chose not to develop it. There was nothing there.
Well, yeah, he chose not to develop it. That's not a reason to distinguish him from the rule of Stewart. That's really where I'm coming down to.
Your point is that no one buys a lot without a desire to generate income.
Right, and exactly.
Operating it or through its sale. And that's why you're arguing in favor of extension.
It's part and parcel of the, he took a risk. He got a big reward on one of the lots, which is great. But as part of that comes the burden of the maintenance. He already has a duty under the municipal code, and he has a duty, the legislature's recognized the duty. So, and then the other, go ahead, Judge.
Exactly what the Chief Justice just said. Yeah. Defendant said in his deposition, he said, well, yes, it's common sense that anyone who would buy this type of property is looking to make money.
Right. I totally agree.
Buying a commercial plot of land.
Right. So does that cut in favor of imposing the duty or not? I think it's a significant factor, right. I would say, with respect, Your Honor, for imposing the duty. And there's a couple other reasons. If you look at Stewart, right, Stewart said, we're going to depart from the historical rule, because it's really not fair. And essentially they said, well, the issue is whether or not if we fail to impose the duty on the commercial lot owner, would that leave an innocent victim without recourse? So that was 1981. Well, nothing's changed. If anything, it's even worse. If we don't impose the duty for the sidewalk, right, in tort on this commercial landowner, who is my client even really gonna be able to recover against?
But what makes that rationale different than the rationale that would apply to any residential piece of property, including the idea that you buy it, as people often do, with the idea it's going to appreciate, I'm going to get value out of it, and I'm eventually going to sell it? In other words, aren't we treading over the line for distinguishing commercial versus residential?
I don't think so, Judge, because, again, I think, with respect, I think the residential property has other interests that the commercial, solely commercial property doesn't. And here's the bottom line. If they're not responsible, so they're already responsible to maintain it under the law, right, under the ordinance. They're the ones responsible. So this woman comes and falls on the sidewalk. Who is she going to recover from?
But under the law, that actually cuts against you, I think. Because,
okay.
So Stewart created this duty only on commercial and not residential owners, as you said, and that was created purely by this court. But Camden in the ordinance just says, quote, the sidewalks in the streets of the city shall be kept in repair by the owner or owners of the abutting property at the cost and expense of the owner or owners of the land in front of which any such sidewalk is constructed. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the elected officials in Camden are not buying this commercial residential distinction. Instead, they're just saying property owners have the duty to maintain the sidewalks. So how does that help you argue that only commercial owners should have this duty, commercial, even if it's a vacant lot, and that residential owners should not, when the elected officials in Camden disagree.
Well, I'm not really making that argument, right? I mean, the only issue before the court is, does the Stewart rule extend to the sidewalk, right? Because if the Stewart rule is already on for an active business, okay, the fact that there's not an active business on it should extend to sidewalk. Whether or not it should also extend to residential owners, I mean, that's not before the court here, and I'm not arguing.
Well, what makes this commercial? Yeah. I mean, the ordinary, I think, use of the term commercial property is there's a business on it. Mm-hmm. So is it because it's zoned in a commercial?
I think that's part of it.
Okay. So there is no business going on.
Right.
Nobody needs a sidewalk to get to the business.
Right.
There's nothing happening on this property other than the occasional visits by the defendant, seems like it, as far as we know.
Yeah.
Somebody could, I guess, break in and use a band. There's a structure on it, is there not?
Right.
So what makes it commercial?
Well, the only thing I could say is, like, I looked at the Supreme Court cases, and they, like this Lachenko case from 2011, actually cites this Abraham case, which I'm saying is really, I don't know if I would say it's wrongly decided, but I would say it should be limited to its particular facts. But in the Lachenko case, this court said, it talked about the difference in commercial and residential distinctions, and it said, to the extent that a theme emerges from the appellate court decisions, it says, the issue is whether or not a property's predominant use has the capacity to generate income, regardless of whether an actual profit is obtained through the use. Well, I mean, if you...
What is the predominant use of this property at the moment of this accident?
Well, it had no use. It was just...
It didn't have it, so no use.
But it had the capacity.
Well, it had the capacity, but it is the... Isn't that the predominant use? You look at what's happening today?
Well...
Well, Abraham says the capacity to generate income is the key.
Yeah.
And regardless of whether it's profitable or not profitable.
Right.
And then you have the Gray case that says, well, there's a vacant lot. There's a lot. There's a vacant building on the lot.
Right.
And even though the building is vacant and not in use and no commercial enterprise taking place and not connected to electricity, there's still a duty. So what are we to make of all that?
Yeah, I think that's too fine of a distinction for me. I mean, I think both Gray and the Abraham case should fall within the Stewart rule of you're liable in tort. You have a duty in tort to maintain the sidewalk. It's consistent with the municipal ordinance. It's fair if you're looking at it from a standpoint of, is it more fair to saddle the victim who gets hurt on the sidewalk, or is it more fair to saddle the defendant? It's a private commercial property owner. He doesn't have to buy the property. He could sell it. He could not buy it in the first place. He could get insurance for it. And even if he couldn't get insurance, he certainly could get somebody to maintain the sidewalk. And in fact, the deposition testimony shows right after this lady got hurt, he repaired the sidewalk. Now, it's not admissible to show negligence, but it's relevant.
It's not admissible to show anything, and there's a reason.
It is relevant, I would say, in this court's view on, is it fair or equitable under tort law to impose a duty on this defendant?
Can we look at subsequent remedial measures as a factor in a duty analysis?
I think so.
So,
yeah.
Mr. Confusion, yeah. Abraham indeed makes the point that Justice Pierre-Louis just summarized.
And yeah. That is,
with the capacity to generate income, which is the key.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the decision, the appellate division pointed out in that case that there is no daily business activity on the lot to which a safe and convenient access is essential, and the lot has no means of generating income to purchase liability insurance or spread the risk of loss by the increase in cost of goods sold or services rendered.
Right.
You want us to focus solely on, does the vacant lot have the capacity to generate income, but not take into consideration whether generating that income is based on an active business on the lot or not? You want a straight white line rule?
I think it really should just be like, it's zoned commercial. You have a duty under the law to maintain the sidewalk anyway. It's not unfair to extend the duty in tort.
And then again, Abraham has all the language that Justice Fishali just read. And then you have Gray, where we have, again, this empty building that is not generating any business, but a duty was found. So
yeah, I mean, you know,
how are we supposed to reconcile all of this?
I agree.
There needs to be some
reconciliation. I mean, to me, I think it's just kind of an easier rule. And a lot of the amicus position, which I think is important in this case, because ultimately the court isn't really stuck by anything.
Let me ask you something. You're relying on the fact that it could be sold as a basis for the concept that this is a potentially income generating property.
Well,
every property, and we have one that was sold for a dollar in this case, but every property is under that umbrella because technically it can be sold unless there's some sort of strange restricted covenant on the deed that says it can't be. So that's an umbrella that covers every single case.
Well, I don't think that's the dispositive factor, but it's a factor.
Isn't the concept of these cases that we have, at least so far, of income generation, a commercial, something is going on that's commercial on the property that's generating income? And that has really two issues. One, it provides an income stream from which insurance can be bought.
Yeah.
But two, it also attracts people to this property who are not trespassers. They're business invitees. And obviously, you talked about the gradations of tort duties. That's a stronger plaintiff than a trespasser.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying there's no factors to go the other way. The court could say, hey, we're going to reject the confusion suggestion and go.
We would never do that, Mr. Commissioner. You're here too often. And you're always a pleasure to hear.
I appreciate your kind words, Your Honor.
Can I just
go ahead, Judge?
Are you through with your answer to Justice Patterson?
That's all right. I'll resume it in a minute. Go ahead, Your Honor. I'm listening.
I never want to interrupt.
that's quite all right.
Go ahead, Justice.
Is in the best. Who is best able to control the risk here, the commercial landowner or the pedestrian?
I think the commercial landowner is best able to control the risk because of the fact that they already have the duty to maintain that sidewalk under the law. So to me, that would be the answer.
But that would also apply to a residential owner, right?
It depends, I think, on the town. Some towns, and I'm not an expert, Your Honor, on the ordinances, but I think the general theme is commercial landowners certainly, I think, are almost uniformly, there's an imposition of duty under the law to maintain the sidewalk.
But we know that doesn't go hand in hand with the imposition of liability.
No, it doesn't. But
I interrupted you, I'm sorry.
But what's important, I think, though, is that's a huge factor in saying in the fairness analysis of the duty in tort, right? So if you say, is it fair to impose a duty? If let's say it went the other way. And the defendant said, well, I don't even have the duty to maintain the sidewalk. It's the city of Camden's responsibility. Look at the statute. I would have a much harder burden in the fairness analysis of whether or not the court should impose a duty in tort. I think because it's in my favor, that's a huge factor in my view for doing it. Go ahead, Judge. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What the chief means, that is bearing the risk of loss.
Yeah.
Obviously, you take the position that the commercial landowner is better situated to bear that loss, that risk. How?
I mean, if they already have the duty to maintain the sidewalk, right? So, I mean, it kind of is part and parcel of you better maintain it not non-negligently so somebody doesn't get hurt.
We know in Stewart that the commercial landowner the duty imposed there made the point that bearing the risk of loss can be borne out by purchasing insurance or charging your customers. How does this commercial landowner bear the risk of loss?
He takes that out of his $134,000, $999 profit.
So it's all about.
I mean,
it doesn't make any sense though, because it's gone, but I'm sorry.
So it's all about then investment.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it's a private investment, right? He didn't have to buy the property. Here's another way to look at it. Is it more fair to say to the person who's hurt on the sidewalk, you're stuck? Because that's what's going to happen. They're going to get stuck because how are they going to recover from the government? The government's going to say, we're not even obligated to maintain the sidewalk. That's on the commercial land. How are they going to be able to show that any recovery? They're going to get stuck.
That's true of residential properties, right?
especially in Camden, where the so we keep coming back to this, but the ordinance in Camden does not distinguish between commercial and residential, correct?
No, it didn't look like it distinguished. Right? But if we're talking about a sense of fairness, and that's really what I'm arguing, and that's squarely in this court's lap, is it fair to extend a duty because this guy had four vacant lots instead of an active business on it? I don't think it's unfair to extend it to the sidewalk.
So your property values go up and they go down.
Mm.
Your answer to Justice Fishali suggests that we should assume they always go up. Is that?
No, but...
Is that an appropriate way to look at the fairness?
No, I don't think that's what... Maybe I answered it too cute. I think Your Honor makes a good point. You know, I mean, there are factors cutting both ways, you know. But
there's a public policy element to this, too.
It's and a Camden, public policy
Camden,
issue.
Camden has, and the public policy, obviously, you're arguing for your client to compensate someone who's injured. But Camden has been working on trying to deal with an issue with vacant properties. And so if you are, if we were to say that if you buy a vacant property in Camden, commercial property and it's own commercial, you better be out there with your, you better hire somebody to be working your sidewalks and checking the weather and doing all these things, even if you're not making any money off that. That's a big disincentive for, we're not talking, we're talking about apparently a small investor here.
Well, I looked for that, and I agree with Your Honor intellectually. As a matter of fact, I expected to hear that kind of an argument or even marshal some kind of evidence from the amicus, but I didn't really see that. I didn't see anything that said if this court extends the duty to a vacant lot owner that it's going to essentially devalue, because that's, I guess,
you agree that's a consideration?
That's a consideration, no question about it.
Can I ask you to clarify something for the record?
Yeah.
Was it my understanding that there was a path that had been tread upon this vacant lot from the front to the back as a sort of a cut through from the sidewalk to behind the property?
Yeah.
Does that factor in any way the fact that it was clear to pedestrians that this wasn't residential, that this wasn't somebody's sort of used property, that it was sort of somehow a common area, that people can just use it in that fashion? Does that factor into your argument in any way?
You mean in terms of whether it's fair to impose the duty and tort on the defendant?
Right.
Or
the evaluation of whether it's commercial when it's sort of become accessible in that fashion.
Yeah. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you, Judge. I'm not sure which way that would cut. I understand the point you're making in terms of I saw that he said I was aware that over the years it had developed this kind of grassy path through the lot. So he knew people were going through it. I guess I would say this, too. This is maybe a slightly broader point. And I know I've taken up a lot of time, so I know the court understands the issues, but I mean, the other factor is this. If it's a distinction of, well, should a private commercial owner, right, who comes in to buy the lot, as he said, for money, is it more fair to impose the duty and tort on the private side, or is it more fair to impose it on the government, the rest of us, essentially, when the government doesn't even have the duty to maintain it in the first place?
Well, you're not going anywhere with the government, right?
No.
So that's not before us.
No, but I'm saying in terms of should you impose the duty of tort on the vacant lot owner, it's more fair to impose it on this private individual who bought the lots for a commercial enterprise than it is to say he has no duty, because that means that the duty lies essentially on the government, which you're never going to recover from them under these kind of facts. It's not going to happen. The innocent person who's injured on the...
But the residential rule puts, in a city like Camden that's very heavily residential, puts miles and miles of sidewalks off limits to a lawsuit, right?
Yeah.
There's nobody to go after.
Yeah.
So I think the question before us is not, it's not that every other sidewalk in Camden, there would be a potential defendant for your clients to sue. This is really kind of a narrow group of properties, and the question is, do they belong in the same category as all those that residential property, or do they belong in the same category as an active, ongoing business?
Right. I think that's completely correct. And I think at the end of the day, the answer is a question of fairness that the court has to really decide. I think that's really what it comes
down to. You agree there are factors on both sides?
Oh, completely factors on both sides, no question about it. And, you know, I tried to kind of articulate the factors that I think show why the duty should be mm-hmm. extended, but there's plenty of factors on the other side. I think at the end of the day, if the court, I guess I would say this, and then I'm going to sit down unless the court has any further questions for me. If the court said, no, the steward duty extends to the vacant lot owner, it would, in some sense, put the ball back. If the legislature, for example, thought that, well, that's really not fair, or it's going to drive down the price of property, or it's going to, you know, dissuade people from buying property. I mean, the legislature certainly could come in and make that policy decision, and which is in their purview to do. But, you know, they haven't done anything since the steward, as far as I can see. I mean, and that was a change in the law then. It's the trend has certainly been in favor, I would respectfully submit, towards my position rather than the position the defendant has taken under the law.
Thank you, Mr.
Pugliano. Okay, thank you for hearing my case this morning.
Thank you, and may it please the court. The issue in this case is whether a duty should be imposed upon owners of vacant commercial lots to maintain abutting sidewalks. In 1981, the court decided Stewart, finding that commercial property owners were responsible for maintaining abutting sidewalks. While the court did not define commercial property owner, the arguments relied upon centered in large part on the business owner's significant interest in the public's use of the sidewalk to access their establishment. The arguments, in essence, presumed there was an ongoing business that had an interest in the public's safe ingress and egress to the establishment. Subsequent to Stewart, cases also focused on the ability of the business to spread the loss by charging higher prices for goods and services. In 1995, the appellate division decided Abraham, which declined to extend Stewart's reach to vacant lots, whether zoned commercial or not. Abraham correctly relied upon the fact that, unlike in Stewart, the owner of a vacant lot has no interest in the public's use of the sidewalk. Neither does the owner have the ability to spread the loss by charging higher prices for goods and services. Certification was sought in Abraham, was denied by this court, and as such, Abraham has stood as a law in this state for 28 years and is relied upon by property owners. The trial court in this matter correctly found that Abraham controls. The facts were essentially similar. There is a completely vacant lot with no business. Unlike in Gray, there was no prior business and thus no profit-making potential. So the appellate division correctly affirmed. We would assert that today the court should affirm, and Abraham is and should remain good law for the following reasons. One, owners of vacant lots, unlike the facts in Stewart, have no interest in the public's use of the sidewalk. Two, owners of vacant lots, unlike business owners, do not have the ability to spread the loss. And three, owners of vacant lots are typically absent from the property and are not in the best position to maintain the abutting sidewalk. It was a key factor in Stewart that the business owner is in the unique position to not only maintain the sidewalk, but to want to maintain the sidewalk. They're there, they're operating an ongoing business, and they rely heavily upon the public's ability to access that business by way of a sidewalk. I did want to address a couple of the petitioner's points. First, petitioner relies heavily on the language in Stewart of a commercial property owner, and that should extend to all commercially zoned properties. That was not the rationale in Stewart. In Stewart, the rationale relied heavily on the existence of a business enterprise relying upon the public's ability to access the establishment. Also, a couple factual issues. My client did not own any of the immediately adjoining lots. I just want to make this clear. My client owns a lot on Westfield Avenue. It's the subject of this suit. It is a vacant field. There is no building. There is no structure. There never was a building. There never was a structure. It is a vacant field. That's the lot that's the subject of this action. He owns another lot further down Westfield Avenue, which was the one that was sold, the lot at issue here, the lot where the incident took place, has never been sold. My client testified at his deposition. He originally bought this lot, the subject lot, to develop it and try to do something with it. And various circumstances led him to believe it was not a developable lot. And he's not able to do anything with it. And there's been nothing done with it for nearly 30 years, I believe. So I just wanted to clarify some of those facts.
There's nothing on it. There's no building.
Nothing.
There's no driveway. It's just
a vacant
lot. There
is no building. There never was a building. Unlike in Gray, where there was a business. There
used to be a building.
Right.
Or there used to be a business.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. There's nothing here. Never was.
The only commercial thing about this is the zoning.
Zoning is the only commercial thing about this property.
There is still the potential to generate income on a vacant lot that might be zoned out of constructing a building.
Yeah. There's no evidence on it. There's always the potential with a commercial lot, something could be done on it. There's no evidence on the record to really substantiate that this is a developable lot. I think the evidence goes the other way. My client testified that he hasn't been able to get, he wasn't able to get approvals. Nothing was feasible. Nothing could
even,
be done.
Even if all that's true, he could have still made money with the vacant lot. Parking lot, selling Christmas trees, advertising.
Yeah.
Billboards, a dog park, I mean, whatever. You don't have to have a building.
Yeah, I think that argument would hold true as to any lot, any commercial lot, I guess. Any commercial lot, you could do something on it. You could put a Christmas tree farm on it, I guess.
The capacity to generate income,
which is what Abraham said is the key. Yeah, any commercial lot, I guess you could make an argument there's something. You could have started a lemonade stand, I guess. But the fact is there was testimony that he explored various things and there just was no viable, there was nothing that was going to be viable. It was cost prohibitive to do anything on this lot and nothing's been done on the lot.
So in Gray, there used to be an active business. At the time of the incident, the building was vacant, wasn't connected to electricity, wasn't in use, correct?
Yeah, I think.
So why does that make a difference?
I think in Gray, there was some intention.
They were trying to sell it. But again, yeah. It's not, again, there's been a lot of discussion about generating business, generating income. That's the big issue. Yeah. It wasn't generating income.
Yeah.
The building was doing nothing. It was sitting on the vacant lot. It may as well not even have been there.
Right.
So what is the difference between just having a structure on it, some structure that used to at some point in the past have a business, but at the time of the incident did not and wasn't generating any income. What is the difference between a scenario like that in Gray and a vacant lot where there's no business, thriving business place?
I think in our case, there never was anything. At least
what
in Gray.
What does that matter? Why does that matter?
Well, I guess in Gray there was a history of profit. There was a history of some revenue.
But not current revenue to spread this risk that we've been talking about. So again, why does it matter? Why that distinction? Because now we have this separate category of vacant building. Yes.
Yeah.
According to the appellate division decision in Gray, if it's a vacant building, nothing happening there, duty owed. Vacant lot, no duty owed.
Yeah, I agree.
How do you reconcile that?
I agree. I think
if we're talking about thriving business, money, spreading the risk.
I agree.
It's the same.
I think if you apply the rationale in Stewart to Gray probably should have been decided differently. I don't think there should have been a duty in Gray because there was no income generated. However, at least in Gray, what the appellate division grasped onto in Gray was. There was a history of some revenue there, whereas here there's no history of anything. There's nothing on the property whatsoever. So they make that distinction. It's a good question. In other words, when would the municipality be on notice that now there's no structure and so now we're responsible versus the property owner?
Just to clarify, sorry, and Abraham, to the extent that the appellate division said that it was about the capacity to generate income, it held that a vacant lot with nothing on it has no capacity to generate income or to purchase liability insurance or to spread the risk of loss onto customers, and therefore there should not be liability in the case of a vacant lot, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor, yes.
We're talking about sort of the lemonade stand kind of business, but the reality is that that doesn't doesn't someone seeking to operate a business on a vacant lot have to go to the local authorities and get permission to do that, whether it's a zoning issue or it's building something? Right. And generally, municipalities, even if you're building a very small structure, want to have a say in that.
Yeah, practically speaking, there's a difference between theoretically being able to do something and actually being able to do it, which my client in his deposition testified to the efforts, some efforts that were made, and just it wasn't cost effective. So you can't just throw up a business. Yeah, you need a site plan.
It was vague, wasn't it? He didn't say I went to the.
I needed to get
a variance and they denied it or anything.
It was vague. He didn't reference any specific variance or anything, but he did talk about the inability to do it and it wasn't cost effective to do anything.
So is your position then that the imposition of a duty depends on the likelihood that this vacant lot will generate income?
No, I think it's a vacant lot, and under Abraham, there is no ability to generate income at the time of the incident. So I guess.
So because of that fact, as you say, exists, therefore there should be no duty.
No duty under
generation of income, whether it's likely or unlikely, is critical factor, is that what you're saying? It's relevant to consideration of whether to impose a duty?
I think it's relevant, but in the case of a vacant lot, we're drawing a bright line rule. There's nothing on there that could, at the time of the incident, have generated anything.
Let me ask you a really close question, and that is, you've got a car dealership. It's sold. It's going to go from being a Ford dealership to a Chevrolet dealership. It's got to be redone in the meantime, and it's not in business during that interim period. The building's there, but there has to be work done on it, and it's not in business. Maybe during that period of time, there's no insurance on the property. Is that a case as to which you would admit there should be a duty imposed? And obviously, this is nothing like your case.
Yeah, but nothing like our case. I mean, in that case, I think that falls more under gray. I mean, that would be more like gray, where it would be more reasonable to impose a duty in a situation like that, where there was an ongoing business, there was a profit potential, and there's certainly going to be a profit potential when it reopens.
Do you think the rule in this case needs to be much more precise than either, you know, nothing, no current commercial enterprise, or there is a commercial enterprise, but more nuanced?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I mean, it's so factually specific to each case, but I think there has to be some business there. I mean, whether the business is temporarily closed or now vacant, like in Gray, but it's so unlike our case that I don't know that.
Not just the potential, but there has to actively be some ability to generate income from what's there?
I think there has to be, because if.
What if, to Justice Vachali's point, that a billboard was erected deep in the lot? It's not really a business. People aren't going to it, but they look at it, they see it, and it's generating an income for your client. Is that enough?
I think you can, no. I think you could. I think. Yeah, I mean, the reality of it. In other words, every commercial lot, you could find something that could potentially be done on a commercial lot to generate.
Which is why people buy commercial lots.
Yeah, sure.
To generate money.
Absolutely.
Like your clients.
Right.
Need it.
Absolutely.
So is it? Good from a public policy standpoint to have a rule that people could just buy up tons of lots, sit on it, and have no obligation to do anything. So, right, you know, here we're talking about Camden, right? But this would apply to any town or city in this state. And I'm sure there's many people that wish they would have bought up 10, 15 vacant lots in Jersey City or Hoboken or Asbury Park 20, 30 years ago and been able to make quite a profit or a lot of money off of these things. So, you know, so if we're talking about a 5 vacant lots in Jersey City near the PASS station that are heavy, you know, where people are walking all the time, there are a lot of vacant lot owners that have no duty, don't take care of their sidewalks, and individuals are getting injured and there's no recourse because it's vacant. No one's responsible for these things. I mean, is that a good rule for us to be imposing?
Yeah, well, number one, I don't think it's typically people are buying up commercial lots to do nothing with them. I mean, I think the intention always is to do something, but like in this case,
sometimes, I mean, there are many places where there's an intention to buy up a vacant lot in hopes that in a few years this will be an area where there will be some development, again, like happened in many locations in Hoboken, in Jersey City, which was, and Asbury Park, which was not taking place many, many years ago. So your client did say that he purchased to make money.
Yeah, I think if you look at Abraham and how it adopted the rationale in Stewart, there has to be that income potential right then and there with something on the lot generating income, because that imposes the duty, because that's the interest the property owner has. Yeah, he is the property owner who's running something active right then and there is there. He's there every day. He has an interest in making sure there's ingress and egress. He's in the unique position to be the best person to do that. Whereas you're saying example of there's lots and people aren't doing anything with them. All the factors of Stewart just don't apply. We're getting so close to
your, kind of applies to your client because he had many lots and he even said that he was there pretty often.
Well, he had one other lot Correct. Down the street, one other yes. lot somewhere
he
else.
He was there pretty often.
Yeah, he was there. I mean, but he wasn't actively, he was there at his business in a different location. He wasn't, he said he testified he drove by, you know, several times, but you're not, it's not like in Stewart where you're there, you're running the business, and you have that active interest in being the party who's in the best position to maintain that sidewalk.
So Justice Noriega asked about having a billboard operating on a vacant lot, a billboard that would obviously be making money. That doesn't count.
Well,
how are we splitting these hairs?
I guess if you look at the factors in Stewart, in other words, you're not operating any type of venture there that where the public has access.
I'm having trouble understanding how we would split all of these different potential business thriving ventures into different categories. There might be a structure on a lot where everyone works from home 3 or 4 days a week and the owner's rarely there. But there is a structure and a physical office. Mail is delivered. There might not be any customers coming. It might not be that type of business. It might not be that type of venture.
Right.
Does that count? I mean, you know, because a lot of the things you're saying is as if this is like a, you know, this has to be a business venture where there is a constant stream of traffic.
Yeah,
there are people constantly there. Post-COVID, there are a lot of businesses where no one's in the office. What do we do here?
I would agree with you. There's some point, yes, where obviously in a situation like that, there's an active business, but people work from home, so there's not a lot of customers. But that's an active business, and I think under Stewart, that would qualify. I guess there is some point where you draw that. Does a billboard get there? I don't know, but
shouldn't that point then be to encourage commercial investors at the time at which they purchase the property with the intention of developing and making money from it, that at that point they should consider liability insurance and protecting pedestrians in the future because their intention is to make a profit? Shouldn't we start from that point? And then whatever they do with the property is on them. But at the moment that they decide to make that purchase, shouldn't they have the burden at that point going forward? And wouldn't that be a better public policy so that everyone understands their burdens and their duties?
Yeah, that's a good question, Your Honor. I don't think that fits with Stewart. I mean, Stewart is saying there has to be an interest there with the public accessing. There has to be the ability to spread the loss.
But your client said, I bought it with the purpose of making money.
Yes, right.
And presumably that's money from the public accessing the property in some way. So doesn't that fit with the commercial aspect of Stewart?
I don't believe so, because he also testified there was nothing, he realized then there was nothing he could do with it.
That came later.
Yeah.
That came after the purchase and time passed. Right. But initially, the objective was, I'm going to purchase it and make money from the public. Shouldn't the burden then fall on him at that point to say, if I'm going to do that, I should also be burdened with protecting the public who might access my property?
I don't think under Stewart that duty arises until such time as there is actual property. I don't think that would be the better rule, Your Honor.
You may not know the answer to this, but can you get a commercial policy on a field?
Yeah, I was going to get to that.
You're in the wrong spot here.
Yeah, my client testified that I think nobody was interested in insuring it.
Underwriting for commercial policies involves looking at the business, looking at who's there, all the different functions of the business, how dangerous it is. It just seems to me if you went to a broker to get a commercial policy on and showed them the picture of your field, they might tell you you're in the wrong place.
It's not in the record so much, other than my client's testimony. He wasn't able, no one was interested in giving him insurance. I can just say, generally, it's hard to insure anything that's vacant. It's harder. It's more cost prohibitive to insure anything that's vacant. So even if you could get a liability policy on a vacant field, you know, query whether that you could get that on the sidewalk as well for an unoccupied field, you know, with a sidewalk, and how much it would cost. In other words, the cost would likely be very expensive relative to a proportional business that is occupied.
Let's say I buy a vacant lot, not to flip it when the market dictates, but rather because I want to start a restaurant, and I know I can. There are no problems with zoning problems.
He's only been on the court for a few months, but he already wants to start a restaurant.
But I know it's going to take me 6 months to get the plans in place, to get my contractor hired, et cetera. But when I buy it, I know the sidewalk is in disrepair. The duty on me will not exist until the shovel hits the ground and they start building. For the first 6 months, I don't have to worry.
You're saying the lot in your example is bought with no approvals or anything. You just buy the lot and you...
A lot. I'm going to build a building, start a business. Before I buy the property, I know I can. No obstacles. It's going to take me 6 months to get everything in order. For those first 6 months, I have no duty, even though I know the sidewalk is in disrepair.
I think under Gray, if you look at Gray, you know, it would be a factor that there is a business coming, that you've got an approval, if there's some right, permit.
That's my question.
Yeah,
What are the things that we need to consider
to
evaluate whether to impose a duty on a commercial landowner who owns a vacant lot? What are the things that matter? In Stewart, we talked about the things like controlling risk, bearing risk of loss, et cetera. What are the factors that we should consider now?
I would suggest there has to be an immediate path to profit.
How do we define it?
I don't know how that's defined. In other words, but there it can't be
because at some point when your client purchased the lots, there was a path to, he was anticipating to do something with them. At what point in that time frame did he have a duty or that factored into whether he had a duty?
I would disagree, though, that there was an immediate path to process. His testimony was he bought it and was going to try to think of something to do with it, develop it, put something on it. There was no approvals in place. There was no permit he got to open up. There was not even a plan.
There's none of that for Justice Fischali's restaurant either.
Yeah, right.
There's none of that for his restaurant either. That's for the first 6 months in his restaurant example, he's just thinking about opening up a restaurant. In month nine, maybe it never happens.
Correct. And that's why I said, I think to answer your honest question, there has to be an immediate path to there has to be something immediate on the horizon. Like in Gray, there was a building there. They were possibly could reopen it. There has to be something there. I haven't gotten into that so much because in our case, there's none of that.
I understand. I'm thinking bigger and beyond this case. Yeah. So it's not that there has to be an active business. There has to be something that shows that there is a prospective business opportunity? Is that what you're
saying? I'm hesitant to say it doesn't have to be an active. There has to be something so close to an active business that it's about to open. That
the answer to his question, the first 6 months, he has no duty because he hasn't done anything. He hasn't gotten any approvals or anything.
Yes, he has no duty.
No duty. Sidewalk is completely destroyed, but he knows he doesn't have to do a thing about it. Doesn't matter that it's in a heavily populated downtown area. People are walking here all the time. Doesn't matter. No duty.
Well, in that example, there, you know, it also depends upon the terms in which he purchased the property. Was there some type of, if the property was that bare, there might be some type of municipal violation in place that had to be cured upon transfer of the property. Because it's an extreme example, but generally, no. I would say no duty if it's just an idea to open a business. And once there's
the availability of insurance a relevant consideration in the fairness analysis?
Sure. It has to be because, like I said, I think it's not only difficult to procure that insurance, but it would have to be very, very expensive. Even if when somebody dies, just to get insurance on your house, when someone dies and the state owns a house, I know firsthand in handling estates, that insurance goes up tremendously because the house is vacant. I can only imagine with a lot like that, insurance is going to be extremely expensive to insure if you could get it at all.
But a factor that I would suggest does not need to be considered is whether in contrast to Chez Fischelli, which is going to be a big success, there has to be a good, profitable idea. It has to be a business that is potentially profitable. But you don't get into. You're not asking courts to get into. Was this diner or dry cleaning, ultimately a potentially profitable diner or dry cleaner? That's not.
No. I mean, once you're talking about after you open and you're generating revenue, whether it becomes profitable or goes down.
You don't
down,
need a profitable business.
Yeah, no. I would say not. Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to add?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Daniel.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, on behalf of Amicus Curiae, the New Jersey Civil Justice Institute, and NJCJI respectfully urges the court to hold that owners of vacant properties do not have a general duty to maintain, repair, deteriorate public sidewalks abutting their properties. I understand there's been a lot of back and forth today. I'm trying to be as non-duplicative of my colleagues here as humanly possible, but there are some grounds I may retread just to highlight some important points. One of those points is, as harsh as it may seem, our civil justice system does not compensate every vicissitude, trial, and tribulation of life. That is a harsh reality that our tort system faces. If Alejandra Padilla had fallen in front of a residential property under these exact same circumstances, we likely wouldn't be here today. We accept that when it comes to residential properties, there is no liability on a landowner for failing to maintain a deteriorating public sidewalk. Harsh as that may be, we accept that because the sense of duty in that case, duty can arise from a host of different issues. Oftentimes, it's an affirmative action on the part of plaintiff. Plaintiffs who, say, bury a pipe underneath the sidewalk that leaks, causing a sinkhole that injures a party later on. We would likely find a duty in those circumstances. Plaintiff who plants a tree next to a sidewalk that grows, causes that sidewalk to uproot. Plaintiff trips and falls. We might find a duty in those circumstances, but it comes down to the notion of fairness. We ask ourselves, in those circumstances, was something done or not done that gave rise to an injury that we would consider your responsibility? And Stewart gives us some clear guidance on how to arrive at duty in circumstances involving sidewalks abutting properties. Stewart talks about that sidewalk being an integral part of a business, not simply because it was connected to it, but because the landowner derived a unique benefit from that sidewalk. It was used for ingress and egress of customers. They could place advertisements on that sidewalk. It allowed them to better operate their business. They could take deliveries there. Whatever it is, there is some benefit that a private individual is receiving from a public property, a public good. And in those circumstances, we're more comfortable finding liability there. Stewart talks about not just the benefit of the property owner, but whether or not that sidewalk facilitated public use of that property by customers, by members of the general public. We have to consider whether or not that sidewalk was facilitating people going in and leaving that enterprise, employees, the business owner, as well as customers. Stewart talks about who is the best party ideally positioned to repair that sidewalk, to inspect that sidewalk, to ensure that it's properly remediated. And it talks importantly about the risk of loss. Stewart and its progeny, I believe it's the Mirza case, talk about the notion of spreading the risk of loss. We do that how? We purchase insurance, we increase our prices. But if there's no business there, no activity there, it's kind of difficult to ask a business or a property owner, rather, to do those things. We're placing an additional burden on them.
Can you tell us whether insurance is available under circumstances like this?
It's interesting, Your Honor. I've spoken to carriers, and it seems to be dependent on the carriers themselves. It's a national issue as well. It changes from state to state. I couldn't find any specific information dealing with New Jersey, except to say it appears to be the general consensus in the industry that vacant lots are substantially more expensive to insure. Vacant lots are substantially more expensive to insure for obvious reasons, for reasons that apply to this case. They don't have someone on site actively managing it. Why would they? There's no current business being undertaken there. And while in this case, the defendant was, let's be honest, an incredibly good property owner. He was going there, according to his testimony, 400 some times. That's not true for all property owners. And indeed...
So how do we incentivize property owners to perhaps go to their properties like this defendant did?
Well, I think the reality is that's up to the municipalities that have sidewalk ordinances. We talk about how, in this case...
The sidewalk ordinance will not establish a duty.
But a fine will encourage you to repair your sidewalk. We have allowed through our legislature...
I understand that there's case law from our court saying that a general sidewalk ordinance that says that the property owner has the responsibility to maintain the sidewalk will not impose tort liability. But the case did not say that a... ordinance could not impose tort liability. So an ordinance could say the sidewalks in the streets of the city shall be kept in repair by the owner or owners of the abutting property at the cost and expense of the owner or owners of the land in front of which on any sidewalk is constructed, and that shall be enforced by, and that can be enforced by a private plaintiff who falls on the sidewalk or something like that. That would be permissible, correct?
I would direct the court to the cases of Carino v. Novotny. I probably butchered the pronunciation there. I apologize. That would be 78 NJ355. Filders v. North. Jersey Street Rail Company, 68 NJL343. And Hogland.
68 NJL?
NJL.
Mm-hmm. That's an old
That's
case.
That's an old one. Errors and appeals.
An old case.
68 NJL, and then one more. What were the numbers after?
Hogland v. Gomez. 68 NJL343. These pin site particulars 352 and Hoagland v. Gomez 290 NJ Super 550. Now, in those cases, particularly, I can walk you through them. In Carino, that case involved a parking ordinance. City of, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, I have it here actually. Lodi, New Jersey had a parking ordinance that permitted cars to be parked only at a specific time, to prevent people being able to cross the street, cars being able to navigate. And the court in that case actually juxtaposed a sidewalk ordinance to the parking ordinance and said, parking ordinances, this one in particular, obviously is designed to protect life and limb. We want to avoid people being hit by cars. And it looked at a sidewalk ordinance and it said, this is a different, very different set of statutes here, or a set of rules. This isn't designed to protect life and limb. This specific ordinance was designed to relieve the municipality of the cost of maintaining public sidewalks. Why? The legislature allowed them to. As previously stated, there's a statute that allows municipalities to pass that burden on to private individuals, property owners. But the court was very clear. There's a difference between a an ordinance that is designed strictly for protection of life and limb, i.e. that sidewalk or that parking ordinance, and one that is designed to relieve a municipality the burden of protecting, repairing, maintaining its own property. Similarly, in the Hoglund case, you actually had a smoke detector ordinance. In that matter, the landlord failed to install smoke detectors. Municipality had an ordinance that said that you had to install them. People were injured. Again, the court juxtaposed that smoke alarm ordinance to sidewalk ordinance. And what did it find? Obviously, smoke alarm ordinances are designed to protect life and limb. Sidewalk ordinances are not. They're about relieving municipalities of the burden of maintaining their own property. Fair or unfair as it may seem standing here today, that's something that our legislature has allowed them to do.
All right, but my question was slightly different. It was, there's no holding from this court that a municipality could not say, in addition to the burden is imposed on you to maintain the property, but that that also can be enforced in tort law by people who fall.
Absolutely reading my mind, Your Honor. I was going to move on then to, I believe it's the Fielder's case, where the court describes essentially the purpose of these sidewalk ordinances, but leaves open the possibility that they could be drafted in such a way that it would create a duty. That's not the ordinance we have here today, though. We have a very different ordinance, and we have no case law dictating that this particular ordinance creates a duty in and of itself that could be applicable in tort law. I hope that answered your question, Your Honor. So looking at the Stewart principles, we have an analysis from Stewart that asks us to weigh a series of factors to determine whether a duty exists. None of these factors appears to be dispositive, but very important among them is the ability to mitigate or spread the risk of loss by virtue of your business activity, in addition to whether or not you as a business owner derive a specific benefit from that sidewalk for your business. There was a discussion earlier, colloquies before, that were detailing and discussing the Gray case. How do we kind of thread that needle there? And I would say that in that case, while none of those factors from Stewart is inherently dispositive, what you might be able to draw from that case is where you have an extant building and therefore there is some immediate capacity for generating income. You have a property owner that is actively marketing it for sale, that is maintained, in that case, also maintained a commercial property policy. Therefore, they seem to think that this was a viable enterprise. Something was going on here. And within, I believe, 18 months of the injury, there had been income from a renter on that property for commercial enterprise. Looking at that in toto, I think we could reconcile that with Stewart to say, on the balance, maybe there we're comfortable creating duty, but that's not what we have here.
Please go ahead.
How do you define immediate capacity to generate income?
I would argue that the fact that a business exists, I'm sorry, that a building literally existed on that property that had in recent history.
You have to have a building on the property.
You have to have some kind of structure, some capital or some kind.
What about my hypothetical? I buy the property, I've got the building plans, I'm waiting for my contractor to tell me when he'll start, and the sidewalk is in disrepair 6 months before they can put the shovel in the ground. Does that satisfy your definition of immediate capacity to generate income?
No, I don't believe it does.
Why?
For several reasons. One, obviously, no building means nothing can actually be done today to generate income, correct? There's no number of chefs that can go into an open field, I think, and make food out of nothing with no utensils, no means for cooking. So at a minimum, something has to be there that can be used to generate income. In addition to that,
let me ask you something about that, because one of the factors that is underlying the Stewart rule is there's a need for people to use the sidewalk to get to the ongoing business. This is an invitation, not talking about business invitee and the tort concept, the duty concept, but this is an invitation for somebody to walk down the sidewalk to this building. In Justice Pichali's example, you're about to have a huge construction project starting. People are going to be there, and it's going to be for purposes of a commercial product. Not this case, but a case where people are about to start crossing that sidewalk and using that sidewalk every day. Why isn't that a factor?
Well, perhaps, Your Honor, that would be a factor if the injury transpired on the property itself. We now have someone coming onto my property. I've invited them to help me construct my dream Shea Fashali. And I've invited that worker on there. Now they've been injured on my property. Obviously, under those circumstances, there would be a tort duty. But that sidewalk, is it actively aiding me in the public's use of my property? Not my employees, not my workers, not me in particular, but the steward speaks to the public's use of your property. And under those circumstances, have you opened your door to the public or a much more narrow universe of individuals? I think the answer to that is a much more narrow universe of individuals. And we can look at that and say, under those circumstances, it seems inherently unfair, at least from my perspective, to impute liability for maintaining a public sidewalk from to prevent harm for the entire universe of people who could be walking the area.
Doesn't that strain logic to some degree when the person purchases a commercial lot in a busy area where there are businesses on either side, and it's natural to presume that the pedestrians will walk from one side to the other, crossing the sidewalk in front of the vacant lot to get to those businesses because the area is commercial. So it's you anticipate that you will have pedestrians on your sidewalk in front of your lot, whether you're actively engaged in a business or not, because of all of the other businesses in the location.
But I think Stuart speaks not simply to the foreseeability that people could be traversing that sidewalk. It's also the concomitant benefit of you and to you from a public piece of property to your business. And I think that's
so
the important
component
there. So
if it's an empty field and people are walking to the businesses between the two businesses, that's not helping that owner.
And also, let's look at it from this perspective. Assume there's a residential property sandwiched between two commercial properties. Under our current case law, no number of neighboring commercial properties would create liability for that residential property. Seems to be the understanding, at least from Yanko and Stewart and its their progeny. What separates then that vacant lot from the residential property? We're willing to protect one and not the other simply by virtue of the presence of commercial properties. And I think it goes back to the Stewart principles. It speaks to whether or not there is a public use facilitated by those sidewalks. It's not simply a matter of knowledge of potential harm or your ability to inspect. It is a host, a constellation of factors that go into it, that in this particular case, it's very clear, don't generally apply. I think maybe perhaps
Articulate the rule you would have us adopt.
If it were up to me, Your Honor, no possible sidewalk liability under any circumstances for any individual, but bearing in mind I don't live...
How about a serious response, Mr.
Bearing Chairman? In mind that I don't live in a perfect world, Your Honor, I believe we'd have to take the Stewart principles and articulate an analysis based on that, so courts in these circumstances would weigh such things as whether or not the sidewalk was part of an integral business enterprise, a going concern, or at least a recent concern. I think you can accommodate the gray case in that regard if there's some component.
What about
to it
what about the hypothetical that I mentioned earlier, where the car dealership is in an in between period between the old owners vacating and the new owners taking over and changing it to a different kind of dealership?
Well, I think in that circumstance, factors like whether or not you're in the ideal position to mitigate or to inspect the sidewalk would weigh in favor, possibly, of duty under those circumstances. At the same time, you also have to realize there is no profit being generated, no money currently being generated to pay for insurance. It may be uninsured at that time. So again, it's going to look something more like a balancing test in that regard. But I think what we can walk away from this circumstance of this case is when you have a vacant property, virtually all those factors weigh against finding liability for the property owner. It gives you a bright line rule based simply by virtue of the fact that you have nothing going on here. No commercial enterprise, no, it's not open to the public, no commercial enterprise. There's no benefit to the property owner, particular to that sidewalk, to their property, and they have no ability to pay for insurance out of revenue from their business. So I think you end up looking more like a balancing test more often than not, drawn from the principles of Stewart. But in this case, it would lean much more in favor of no duty than not.
Other questions, anyone? Anything else you'd like to add, counsel?
No, Your Honor, not this time.
Thank you. Mr. Confucione, brief rebuttal.
wanted to give Justice Wiener out there that statutory site, Your Honor, if you want. It was, I think it's NJSA 40:65-14 was the statutory site.
Thank you.
And maybe just to clarify, you know, the record, I think there are some pictures in the appendices at like A72, for example, kind of gives you at least, there's some pictures that show you what the nature of that street looks like. And then the other record evidence I think is important, again, to tether it to this case, would just to be like, if you looked at the appendix from the Appellate Division, obviously at A19-34, it actually goes through the lots and it shows which ones the defendant owned and then all the other lots that are in that street, which kind of gives you some idea between that and the pictures of the nature of the street. And then the only other thing I would say is, obviously very close question, interesting argument on all sides. The only thing I would say about the amicus's argument is that it tends to look at the issue in a vacuum. There is a sense of unfairness for the defendant who owns a vacant lot compared to somebody who owns a thriving business. There's no question about it. But the analysis has to incorporate, I would submit, some concept of the other interest in there, one of whom is the person who got injured. And that's the question of fairness on whether to impose the duty. It has
that's
to
in
be
the Stewart test.
Yeah.
Right? Your client's part of the fact.
Yeah, exactly. It has to be a look at
the entire test.
Exactly. And then also the interest of the public. One facet, at least, of that interest is that the public, at least through its ordinances and the statute I cited, has said the property owner, at least in our case, the commercial property owner here, is responsible for maintaining the sidewalk. So I think when you decide the fairness question of a duty and tort, it has to look at the whole analysis of all those interests, not just that of the defendant. It's a hard case.
Thank you.
Thank you for hearing the case, Your Honors.
Thank you for the helpful arguments, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.